Welcome, dear listeners, to this week's Afternoon Satsang. This is Prem from Team Radio Sai, and with me is Arvind. And we are going to continue our discussion which we had last week. But before that, as always, we should offer our most loving pranams at Bhagwan's lotus feet, because this, like many of our other satsangs, in fact, all of our other satsangs, is completely drawn out of Swami's message, given so categorically, given with such relevance to the times in which we are in. And as we will be playing many more discourses about the discussion which we had, which is a continuation of what we had last week about the effects of television viewing and such media on our minds, and especially on growing children, this is going to be the second part of that conversation. We have a lot of discourses which we'll be playing directly, clips from discourses. So probably that'll give us more authenticity to what we are saying, because these are all beautiful messages, very profound ones, directly given by Swami. So to join all of us, let me invite Brother Arvind. Saram Arvind.
Saram Prem. And just as we had discussed last week, though this theme is television, that is the poison of television, considering today's world, the scope definitely must be expanded, I think, to include mobile phones, tablets, the computer screen, and every other kind of screen conceivable, because today television is not just one box that is there at home. You know, nowadays we are getting screens that are as big as a wall itself. The entire wall becomes a screen. Table surfaces have become screens. There have been some restaurants opened with this theme where the entire table surface is like a screen where you can play games, where you can watch stuff. You can just keep scrolling on the on the table itself. I think it would be a different kind of experience. Usually, we take care not to drop food outside the plate onto the table, because that food gets dirtied. I think now you can't drop food because the table surface is actually an electronic surface. So, with such proliferation of audiovisual devices, television can be expanded to refer to all these also. And the point where we stopped last week was how this particular explosion of technology, this particular growth in audiovisual media, is especially affecting infants and children. And so today I think we will continue to discuss more on this explosion into multifarious ways, as well as the especial impact on children.
Right. I think we had played a couple of discourse clips last week, where and we discussed from what Swami was telling about TV viewing, and especially about, you know, growing children. And we also mentioned that we'll continue the discussion in that direction, especially for children, and you know, more so because especially when parents don't have the time to spend with their children and don't have the patience, and you know, both parents working, and that is the situation which probably is the reality. You know, you can't, we can't really say that it can't be like that, and you know, parents should not go out. In many places, the situation is that it calls for such thing, and in a situation which is caused by both parents working, you know, you don't have parents having enough time to feed the children. We were speaking about how in the past, where you would be shown the moon and you'd be shown the, you know, the birds flying around and then be fed. Now you're given an iPad or an iPhone in your hand and then you're fed. It makes your job so much easy, but you know, the effect of that is so far reaching, as Swami was saying.
I don't know whether we spoke about this last week, but did we say about how when a child watches a television, it's different from an adult watching a television?
We actually made a mention as we were closing last week, so I think probably we can start from there.
Yes. So there have been several studies that have been done on this aspect, and it's proved beyond doubt that the way adults perceive things on a television is totally, totally different compared to the way a child perceives a thing on a television, and that's why it becomes especially important when it comes to children. For instance, I think this is what we said last week, that when a child is shown a bowl full of popcorn on television and asked what would happen if the screen is bent or, you know, turned upside down, almost 100% of the children respond with the thing as a matter of fact that the popcorn will fall out of the television. Now, this is something that a child perceives, but this is not, I'm sure that even 1% of the adult will not give this kind of an answer. And therefore, when we do this, when we subject children to television, it affects them in ways that we don't understand, because that is not the way we perceive television as adults. For instance, there was this research done wherein, yeah, I think we mentioned this last week, wherein in a room there were puppets that were kept, and the room had a viewing window the size of a television through which a few children were watching.
Mm-hmm.
There was another group of children who were shown a video edit of the same puppets in the room. So, in the video edit, you have the advantage of close-up, you have the advantage of showing different angles, things that you can never see from one single perspective, multi-dimensional, multi-perspective view with close-ups, zooms and creative shots. All this which an adult will be able to appreciate because of the pre-existing knowledge. When this was shown to the child, and later the two groups of children were taken to the same room, the children who viewed it through a window were able to locate the position of the puppets and relate to the whole room, while the children who were shown the television and the edit of the room were not able to relate to it. So in that sense, even when we are showing things which we consider as factual, general knowledge, which will help the kid understand better, because the child has been exposed to this even before the child has been exposed to what is being shown on television in reality, it actually changes the reality for the child, it confuses the child, and can lead to several adaptability problems later on.
I mean, in many ways, actually, the one of the most important points which came up in the discussion last week is, from the spiritual point of view, you know, we are all the time talking about coming out of what we call is, defined by Adi Shankara as mithya. You know, it appears real, but it is not real. You know, that is the world which we are going through. And in fact, when Swami was once talking about the habit of drinking, that's what he said. You know, when anything that takes you farther away from reality is so much more, you have to keep away from. And that's one of the reasons why intoxicants have to be kept far away from. Because, you know, it gives you a false sense of happiness, a false sense of delirium. It kind of masks that pain which is within you. It removes you from reality, which is itself not reality. And, you know, where is the question of you going towards the true reality? And we were speaking about how in these, when watching something through the virtual world, you kind of create another
illusion within an illusion,
and how it confuses, especially for children, as you were saying. That there are many, many funny videos like that which show, like, you know, there are these children who are asked to see something. They've shown something in the horizon and they say that, can you see that bird? And children kind of do that pinch and zoom kind of an action. Because they think that you're seeing a scene, and if you want to see closer, you have to zoom it, right? How you do on a iPad or a, you know, tablet. So it's more like that. Definitely over a period of time, you kind of unlearn, and that'll be a different process altogether. But we don't know how much is lost, because even in our regular learning when we were in school, so much of our learning was done by physical action. Like even the regular, learning of alphabets or arithmetic, all of that was done with physical objects. You know, you'd be given blocks, you would be given colorful objects which you can feel, and, you know that one is something which is, you know, solid. And that kind of learning is going away, I think, in many ways.
Absolutely. And when you say that we don't even know how it's impacting, there is a lot of research to show that in some ways we already know how it is impacting. And the conclusion that is being drawn is that most of the times these things do the opposite of what they're supposed to do. For instance, we think that showing things on the television enhances general knowledge, enhances understanding. And we have seen how, in this special case of children, it doesn't actually enhance knowledge, but it confuses them more. One may argue that this is only in the case of children. For instance, if I watch a documentary, it is definitely enhancing my knowledge. So therefore, children is a special case. Yes, right. We spoke of children as a special case. But even in general case, there are many examples to show that these things do the opposite of what they are meant to. One classic example when it comes to discussing the other handheld devices and such tablets and phones is that of social media. Social media by definition is supposed to make you more sociable, interact with more, build your community. If you had 10 friends, you now will be able to have 100 friends, grow in your circle. But over the last 7 or 8 years, studies that have been done have shown that social media is actually making you asocial, if not antisocial. You know, the impact of that can be seen. I personally know in my own life, Prem, a couple of friends.
Mm-hmm.
They became friends because of the common connect with Swami.
Okay.
So they became friends over Facebook. And these are people whom I have never met. And in the beginning, I had accepted those friend requests because I thought that the common bond is with Swami. But then I realized that, you know, this is so, so different. When Swami says that worldly friendship is bad, because it is false, it is illusory, it's hi, hello friendship. They don't even say goodbye to you. That is the way Swami pounds on worldly friendship. In that illusory world, when we build up a virtual world friendship, I feel if Swami was given the opportunity to speak, he would pound it even more. Because I saw some strange behaviors, not with everyone, but with some people definitely. When I actually happened to meet this person face to face, right in front of the studio. And guess what? This person is unable to have a conversation of even a minute with me.
Mm-hmm.
Just not talking at all. I first honestly thought that this person was disabled, in the sense can't speak, mm-hmm. has some problem speaking. But then I got to know it's definitely that person is disabled, but not speech disabled. This person is disabled because of the after effects of social media. Guess what? Even to this day, this person communicates at length through messaging and through emails, but just can't speak face to face. And I'm not saying that the only cause for this is social media, but I brought up this case just to show that research has shown that social media has actually made people asocial because of one important facet that it kills, which is spontaneity. They say when we communicate with friends, when we talk to friends, there is spontaneity. But when I do it via messaging over WhatsApp or over Facebook or via mails or whatever, there is that ability to go back, edit. There is one thing what I want to say, I can make it appear in some other way. All this ability to edit is killing away spontaneity. And one of the side effects of spontaneity dying is the inability to just have a conversation across a table or across on the street when you meet face to face. That is another serious problem which is being seen, and therefore when one says that these things are standing for something but they are having the opposite effect, it is not only true for children. In some of the cases it is true for everyone.
Right. In fact, if you look at it, whenever Swami speaks about speech, Swami would say speech is like the window to your mind. You know, people judge you based on what you speak. People judge you based on how you express your ideas.
Mm.
And that's literally the window you give to people to see, look into your head, right? And it so much depends on spontaneity. You know, when you're put in a situation, what you say is what you are. But what we do in the form of sending mails all the time, you know, sending messages all the time, is we are consciously restricting that our real nature to be shown out. Which is good in a certain extent, you know, that is where responsibility comes. You know, when you're, let's say I'm speaking something to you, I can tell you something off my hand. But if you tell me that, you know, will you put it in an article, then I will have to go and do a thorough fact checking. And unless I have all the facts, I will not mention it in an article which is going to be preserved, right? That's where responsibility comes. But, you know, here is a mixing of that kind of caution which has to go with certain kinds of expression coming in day-to-day expression.
You know, the mixing has resulted in an absolute inside-out or opposite kind of change.
Right, I mean, it's not just one way, you know, where you're supposed to be responsible.
Where you're supposed to be formal, you know, informality has crept in.
Right.
And, you know, and where you're supposed to be informal, there is formality that has crept in. I feel it has led to an opposite kind of move, where you see, you know, nowadays, you just Google it up or you just search it online, you'll get to know of a shocking fall in the number of people who can just communicate formally. When you're sending a mail to your boss, when you're informing, the way you communicate, you just can't WhatsApp or text and say, hey, I'm not able to, sorry. You know, it is shocking. At the same time, it's not as if informality has grown in the world and it is seeping into business communications and seeping into formal communications. That's not the fact. Because when it comes to informal conversations, you know, when I had been once to this, Thailand, I had been to the city of Pattaya there for a holiday, I really saw three kids having a chat at a table. Not one decibel of sound was being heard because all three of them were chatting through their mobile phones. Mm-hmm. And two of them, in fact, had a power backup for the mobile phone because they were worried that, you know, they may run out of charge and therefore their ability to communicate will come to a stop. So you see, it's not as if the world has become more informal because of social media and because of which people are opening up more and more and because of which even formal communications are appearing informal. It's not like that. Where one is supposed to be formal, it has become informal. Where one is supposed to be informal, I don't know if whether you can call it formal, but it has just definitely led to a kind of closing up because of which for many people who are deeply into the social media, into their devices, their phone or tablet is their best friend. They rise with it, they sleep with it, they take it to the bathroom, they eat with it, everything. It has become their life. You know, that is what is one of the terrible effects of this kind of audiovisual media. In fact, today they are getting to know that, you know, you have this audio assistant like Siri on the iPhone, and mm-hmm. I think for each kind of mobile they have their own name that they have given. Basically the phone talks in an accent and in a voice that you would like, a male voice or a female voice with an English accent or an Italian accent or an Indian accent. Shockingly, Prem, for many people that robot, that robo is their best friend. Communicate, they talk with that, and this has started getting even into television serials and movies where there are people shown having their best friend as this voice in the phone. Once it comes into the movies, you know that it has started getting into the world. So this is the extent of damage, extent of isolation that is coming because of the proliferation of television via audiovisual media into many, many ways, you know, social media, whatever.
Multiple things which happen here. Once when we were having a discussion with somebody who was in the field of media regarding radio, I think he was a radio broadcaster for many years, and you know, he's from the 1940s and 50s, in that era. So when we were talking about the radio and things like that, you know, he was talking about why people still listen to the radio. Mm-hmm. And what was it, what is that aspect of radio which actually made radio click in the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
Right. It's just that when you walk into a room and you switch on a radio, you don't know what's coming by, right? And it's just that freshness which really caught people, you know. It's just like when I walk into a room and I see a person sitting there, I don't know what conversation I'm going to strike, right? So it's more or less, it's the same thing, but here is somebody who is probably, you know, when you listen to some music channel or something, you listen to music. You know, if your interest is in that field of music, it kind of gives you that freshness which... And they often say that, you know, that is why radio will still click. Like when we were having the discussion of should we completely move away from a radio stream kind of a thing and have only downloads available, and because we know that a lot of people download our programs more than listening online.
Mm.
So that person was saying that, you know, this freshness of the radio is what keeps it alive. That people want that surprise element that I come and tune into radio, so I don't know what's the program going on. So let me see what's there.
There's no way for me to scroll ahead and see.
Right.
And, yeah.
And, you know, what we talk about as, you know, time deferred television, or you're talking about social media where I choose what I want to see. I can choose my programs. We are actually moving towards a more and more environment which we believe, which we imagine is controlled by us. No, we are saying that I choose what comes to me. I choose what I see. I choose what I like. But as we spoke last week, without our knowledge, you know, so much of what we actually don't want come into our conscience through these means.
I think it would be best at this point to play the play a clip which Bhagwan has given. I think it is a clip 5, clip number 5, which is part of a discourse that Swami delivered on the convocation in 1999. It highlights only this, that we think that we are in charge, we are making choices. We don't realize that at an unconscious level, we are just being fed into by what benefits and profits of you people.
Right, so we'll just listen to that clip.
You know it. Everything is a picture.
మీరు ఇక్కడ ఉన్నంత కాలము మీరు చక్కగా మంచిగా అన్ని విధమైన అనుకూలంగా సరైనటువంటి శాంతిగా మీరు జీవిస్తూ ఉంటారు.
సో లాంగ్ యూఆర్ హియర్ యూఆర్ కంఫర్టబుల్ సేఫ్ అండ్ సెక్యూర్.
తిరిగి గృహాలకు వెళ్లిన తట్టమే
బై ది టైమ్ యూ గో బ్యాక్
ఈ టీవీలు
టీవీ
సినిమాలు
సినిమా
యొక్క వీడియోలు అన్ని తెచ్చి పెట్టుకుంటారు.
యూ హ్యావ్ ఆల్ దీస్ థింగ్స్.
అవి ఎంత మాలిన్యపరుస్తున్నాయి మీ హృదయాన్ని.
దే పొల్యూట్ యువర్ హార్ట్.
ముఖ్యంగా మనిషి యొక్క జీవితాన్ని నాశనం చేసేది వీడియోలే.
Human life is ruined by videos and
TV. ఈ TV వాళ్ళు పెద్ద ఒక పెద్ద అడ్వర్టైజ్ చేస్తున్నారు కానీ వాళ్ళ డబ్బు కోసం వాళ్ళు చేస్తున్నారు, మీ మంచి కోసం కాదు.
You have TV advertisement for money purpose, not for your good.
That was a very short clip, but I think it made things very, very clear. If we realize something, that all the programming that we are seeing is born out of selfishness with a desire to benefit themselves, that in itself should show that it is disastrous, because anything that is selfish is bad, anything that is selfless is good. And Swami is clearly saying that all the advertisements that you see, everything that you see is having its origin or birth in some way or the other in selfishness. How can something that is having its birth in selfishness be of any benefit to you? It is of benefit to those few people who benefit by you getting glued on to this audiovisual media. I think that is a very, very powerful point for us to ponder on.
Very true. In fact, you know, it comparing it to the past when, you know, our advertising actually or our knowledge of the new products was only the neighbor, right? You know, when we would go and ask the neighbor and the neighbor would tell us, I'm using this, it's good, why don't you try it out? You know, what has happened, if you just look at what is happening in the advertising field alone, there is a product which probably the company, as Swami was saying, wants to push. Who benefits if that product is bought? The company is bought. So now the company comes and says that, look, goes to an advertising agency and says that you advertise for this product, okay, and I will share my benefit with you, right? And so that person has got nothing to do with that product being sold or being bought. He's just going to get a commission if it is bought, right? No harm to him if it is used and it harms somebody or something like that. So he is completely away from both the realities. And he brings in only his creativity and creates an advertisement, which is pretty much a lie, really. Because that person has not used it. In fact, right now that debate is going on, especially celebrities who endorse products. They should be held responsible if those products fail or, you know, there's some problems which come with that product. So it's literally an advertising agency comes and tells you all the advertisements which you see on TV is somebody telling you a lie. It may be true, but somebody is telling you something which they have never used.
In most of the cases.
In most of the cases, because I was once having this conversation with a person who is working in the advertising agency, and I expressed this. You know, aren't everybody doing in the advertising field actually lying? You know, you get a model who says that I'm using this exercising equipment and I've become thin. I mean, he has gone through an entire sequence of regimen and exercise, and he has got his body in shape. And he just gets onto an equipment and he says, I use this and it's good. It helps me. And we believe it. So I was thinking that, I was telling this person that, I mean, everything that you see as advertisement is actually a lie. And that person got back to me by saying that, aren't you also doing that at Radio Sai? Aren't you marketing Swami? Right? And, you know, that is where actually it's a very, very important difference. The very fact that you and I are sitting here and putting a discourse of Swami and talking about it is, this really means to us. You know, this, I am pledging my life on this. You know, I am pledging my future on this, saying that I believe whatever Swami has said, and that's why I have chosen to be here, that's why I have chosen to be a part of Swami's organization. And I am telling that this is what Swami says, and I think we should listen to that. Right? The difference is so much. And many times when Swami would talk about spirituality, Swami would tell that, look at the rishis. Do they have anything to gain from you following the path? But they teach you the path. And so Swami would say, it's only a person who is backed by selflessness who gives you a piece of advice. That advice can be followed blindly. And going back to the clip which we played, Swami is saying that who benefits from all of this that you see? the person who makes all of this and the person who actually sells you these products benefits. And I don't know, we just like sitting ducks going, you know, fall into this.
You know, if we go on in this discussion, it can go on and on and on, because as I said, the ways in which now this is coming, we had brought in the mobile phone and tablet because nowadays this advertising is not restricted just to the television. They are able to customize advertisements based on what sites you visit. It's everywhere now. You can't watch a, you know, whether you try to watch a video or try to look at a photograph or try to check the news, whatever you try to do, the advertisers have got in there. And based on which advertiser is paying, based on who is paying for it, the news itself is getting modified, you know. The same thing is reported in five different ways. Why? Simply because you can find out the reason by doing a background check on who is paying for that. So, it is such a kind of a nasty scenario. And
they say one of the biggest owners of one of the biggest newspapers in India, this is supposed to be one of the most criticized statement that he has made. He said, we are not in the business of news, we are in the business of advertisement.
Whoa.
I mean, it's a newspaper, daily newspaper, an English newspaper, which has got one of the maximum circulation readership in India. And he said, we are not in the business of news anymore, we are in the business of advertisement.
Well, no, that is news for me. see, when that is the case, that's why I say, I think we can safely assume that most of these things are doing exactly opposite of what they're supposed to do. News is doing advertising. And we seem to receive our news from advertising. Social media, as I said, has made us asocial. In fact, I remember when I was reading on the effects of social media and going through some different talks by different people, very, very enlightening talks. There are a lot of such talks. Even TED Talks are existent on the internet. One statement that stood out for me is, if you want to beat loneliness, it is important that you have solitude in life. That is when I realized that today solitude is a word that doesn't seem to have any meaning, because we are never alone. Though we are cut off from our friends, see, that is the paradoxical part. We are never alone, but we are never with friends also. We don't have time for friends, we don't have time for family, we don't have time for God, we don't have time for Swami, we don't have time for anybody. So then what? So that means I must be having a lot of stuff that I do alone, right? No, but I'm not alone also. Why? Because I'm all the time with this device. As I said, what we would sing, Twameva Mata Cha Pita Twameva. You are the mother, you are the father, you are the friend, you are the guru, you are my guide, you are my light. That is what has happened. The mobile or the pad has become that, you know. You are my friend, you will give me counsel. When I have any doubt, I check online. You are my father, you are my mother, I seek your advice, you are my light. Yeah, if there's no power, literally you are my light. I put it on, it's my everything. It's my guide to the weather, it's my guide to the world, it's my guide to spirituality. It has become everything. And therefore, we are seeing that though we are apparently connected all the while, we are totally disconnected all the while. This is the paradox of our times. Though we say we are connected all the time, we are disconnected all the time. Though we have something which is called social media, it's actually promoting asocial behavior and antisocial behavior. Though we are saying that we have 1,000 friends, we are lonely. And though we say we don't like to be alone, what we desperately need today is actually solitude. Those moments of introspection when we can be together with our own self, so that we understand. That is the kind of, you know, disastrous problem at a mental, psychological and spiritual level that we are facing as human race the world over.
Next week we are going to start Gram Seva for this year. Many times when I see Gram Seva, I think the message which Swami was giving was, we all know that we are supposed to have compassion in our heart. And we all know that these are qualities like empathy and sympathy, really takes us closer to humanness and closer to divinity, right? But Swami also insisted that you really go out there, you see it and you feel these things. Probably we could have done it by sitting in our classrooms and seeing videos of poverty in India and people not having enough food and not having the kind of comforts which we have. But we going out and literally witnessing it and being in the middle of that, That makes a lot of difference. And going back to what we were talking about children and, you know, the alternate reality which they get, which they kind of grow in. This is something which happens, you know, when you see a video. I mean, we are in the business of making videos and, you know, things like that for people to watch. So if I'm going to make some video which is supposed to be moving, I know what is the music which is supposed to go with that. I know what are the kind of edits I have to put there and, you know, dissolves and the lighting that you add to it. So even we who are talking so much about, you know, what kind of manipulation happens through the media, we know that we have to do that media, the kind of manipulation, if you want to push that content. Imagine when children see these things. It's almost like, you know, where we've spoken many times about that experiment of the Pavlov's dog experiment,
yeah.
Right? You connect a lot of emotional reactions to certain sounds and certain kind of images and things like that.
Certain inputs.
Right. So literally you're telling your children that here is a moving video. Seeing this video is supposed to have compassion. So this is the music that goes along with it. And this is the kind of editing that goes along with it. So I wonder if the children really go out into the world and see pain, if they see poverty, will they really have that kind of compassion, or will they need all these things?
You know, what you're talking about has actually been studied, and there is a term also for it. They call it pretend empathy. You know, just imagine 10 years back when they were talking about how there would be a robo at home, which will be the helper and also be your friend. You know, it for me, it felt like science fiction.
Mm-hmm.
But today, actually, we have robos. Robos which serve as your best friend. And there are people who depend entirely on those robos. And these robos come in every form. They come in the human form. They come as dogs. And you know, these robos, by information gathering, they develop what we call as pretend empathy.
Mm-hmm.
So when you say that, you know what, okay, whatever the, suppose Mitch is the robo, I'm just taking a random name. So you say, you know, Mitch, I had a very tough day at office. Oh, I'm sorry to hear that. And you know what, that is not coming with empathy, arises from the inner recesses of the heart. That robo there has no heart. It's just speaking in a tone that is meant to please the ear. You know, it's going so much more virtual and non-spontaneous. So much of research has gone in to find out what are the frequencies that accompany empathetic voice. And the robo speaks in that frequency. What is the speed to speak with? And it learns purely as an academic and intellectual situation. That's how these robos learn, and they seem to be becoming more and more empathetic. They also learn the actions that are supposed to go with it, coming and holding hand. And you know, if that robo were to be a real person, what I would call that person? A hypocrite and a big actor. Because I know you feel nothing for me and you're just acting like you're my buddy. What is your hidden agenda? That is what I would have done if it was a person. But here I'm melting and I'm thinking that this is my best companion. This kind of, you know, it again highlights the basic flaw that we mentioned in all these audiovisual media, which is they create an illusion within an illusion. When we're trying to get out of this illusion called this bhavasagara, this bhavaroga we want to get out of, they give a way out by saying you go deeper into another illusion and escape this illusion. You know, that is the kind of crazy levels it has come to.
Even there's a very, very fundamental underlying problem in all of this. You know, when you when you're talking about robos, and especially there are pets which are robos, and there are virtual pets. You know, you can download an app and you can kind of care for a pet. You can take a pony, or you can take a rabbit or whatever it is, and every day you can interact with it, and you know, you kind of feed it, you give water to it. If you look at it, you know, why are people really going for this? You know, I have a house, why am I not buying a dog and probably thinking of a robo dog or a thing like that? Because having a dog definitely does, it gives you the benefits of, you know, whatever the good benefits which are there. You know, you have a companion or a friend or something
like
that.
But it also brings up responsibilities.
But also brings up responsibilities and pains and troubles with it. You know, you have to care for that dog. It's another being, you know. And if you're talking about having a servant at home, or a person who is a helper at home, definitely there are benefits with that, but there are responsibilities which go with that. You know, there are things which are not very easy. And the fundamental thing which I was talking about is, more and more we are moving towards this idea that I don't want those things which are going to give me trouble. Let me just take the benefits. And that is what is actually causing us to create these things. We are trying to filter out what will give us
responsibilities.
In more responsibilities. And, you know, why have a friend who is going to tell something which is going to hurt you sometime? You know, you might as well have a Siri which
is complete control over. It's a two-way. It's a two-way where you are there for me when I need, and I am there for you when you need.
Right.
I don't want to do that. So a robo will never need my empathy or my sympathy. So therefore, best is to get the robo. But we are losing out on a real thing. It's like, it's better to have half-cooked food rather than watch HD images of real food. That's what Swami says in a discourse. By just thinking of food, your hunger won't be satiated. But that's exactly what we are trying to do now. Thinking of food and trying to satiate our hunger, replacing a real person with a robo and thinking that it meets our needs.
Exactly. And when we are talking about spirituality, when we are looking at it as spiritual aspirants, I think this is very, very important that Swami keeps repeating this. Pain and pleasure cannot be separated. You know, you have to accept both of them together. If you want to have a real life, you have to accept them together, you know. And this is actually a nature which you can see in every aspect of life which is coming in.
Hmm.
You know, people don't want to get into marriages. They want the pleasures that a married life will give, but they don't want the responsibilities that will go with it. So, you know, no strings attached. So they talk of that. And everything else, you know, if you go to a school, there are some responsibilities which go with that. Parents who have some responsibilities if the children have to go to school, then why not have some virtual classrooms? You know, let the child sit at home. You have a virtual tutor. You get a CD-ROM which is going to teach you the entire subject. And we are literally doing this in every aspect of life. We are separating, you know, the difficult part of life from what is the easy part of life, and we are choosing only the easy. And this will really result in a lot of decay spiritually more than anything else.
You know, we spoke quite a lot on its impact on children. I think no discussion on the impact of television on children can be complete without one important facet, which is the impact it has on children who are not yet born. And I think Swami clearly mentions in great length in a discourse, this is again a discourse clip taken from the 1999 convocation discourse, it's not from that discourse, but in this discourse clip, Swami elaborately describes what are the effects of any kind of input on an unborn child, and therefore how much more careful one has to be with television. It's a slightly longish clip, it's about 9-10 minutes, but I think hearing it would be definitely very enlightening.
ఒకానొక సమయంలో మహాభారత సంబంధమునందు సుభద్ర నిండు గర్భవతిగా ఉండిన సమయంలో ఆమెకు ఏదో కొంత విశ్రాంతిని కలిగించే నిమిత్తమై అర్జునుడు అభిమన్యుని యొక్క తత్వాన్ని అర్థం చేసుకొనలేక
దిస్ ఇస్ అన్ ఇన్స్టెన్స్ ఆర్ ఎపిసోడ్ ఫ్రమ్ ది మహాభారత సుభద్ర వాస్ ప్రెగ్నెంట్ అండ్ One day, Arjuna, who could not understand the nature of Abhimanyu, who was in the womb,
ameku padma vyuhanni gurinchi cheptu vachadu.
Arjuna was discussing this padma vyuha with Subhadra.
Bharat deshamlo prachina kalam nundi garbhamlo dharinchinatvanti streelaku uttama kathalanu pavitramainatvanti bhavamulanu ఆహ్లాదంగా అందించేటువంటి యొక్క బోధనలు కలుపుతూ వచ్చేటువంటి వారు.
ఇట్ హాస్ బీన్ ఎన్ ఏన్షియంట్ కస్టమ్ దట్ ప్రెగ్నెంట్ విమెన్ వర్ ఎక్స్పోజ్ టు టాక్స్ ఇన్ టర్మ్స్ ఆఫ్ కమ్యూనికేటింగ్ సేక్రెడ్ నోబుల్ అండ్ లాఫ్టీ ఐడియాస్.
ఎట్టి బాధలు కూడాను మనోవ్యతలు చింతలు కలిగింపకుండా ఉండే నిమిత్తమై అప్పుడప్పుడు కొన్ని విధమైనటువంటి శ్రీమంతములని మరొక కార్యములని సరిపి వారిని ఆనందంతో ముంచడానికి ప్రయత్నించేటువంటి వారు తల్లిదండ్రులు.
The parents used to make an earnest endeavor to see that these pregnant daughters of theirs would never suffer any agony under any circumstances.
దీనికి అంతరార్థం ఏమిటి?
They used to perform rituals to see to it.
తల్లి ఆనందించిన గర్భస్థుడైనటువంటి ఒక శిశువు కూడాను తన జీవితమంతయు కూడాను ఆనందముతో ఉత్సాహముతో కొన్ని విధమైనటువంటి యొక్క శౌర్య ధైర్య పరాక్రమములతో అభివృద్ధిగాంచగలడం అనేటువంటి ఒక విశ్వాసం.
What is the inner significance of this exercise on the part of the parents? The idea is the child which is in the womb of this mother would, after it is born, become valorous, valiant, and be all that is noble and good and godly.
తల్లి గర్భముగా ఉండినప్పుడు ఎట్టి భావములను ఎట్టి యోచనలను ఎట్టి తలంపులను తలంచునో గర్భమునందున్నటువంటి శిశువు కూడాను అట్టి భావములి అట్టి తలంపులే అట్టి విచారములే కూడాను చేకూరుతుంటాయి.
The idea is that the pregnant woman, when all the thoughts that she entertains during this period would be transmitted to the child that is to be born.
ఈ సత్యాన్ని మన ప్రాచీన ఋషులు ఏనాడో కనిపెట్టారు.
So this truth was something known to our ancient rishis long ago.
కనుకనే అట్టి పవిత్రమైనటువంటి యొక్క స్థితినియందు తమ జీవితమును గడపడం చేతని తమ బిడ్డలు కూడాను ప్రాచీన కాలమునందు తల్లిదండ్రులకు సంతృప్తిని పరిచేటువంటి ఒక జీవితాన్ని గడుపుతూ వచ్చేటువంటి వారు.
So this used to be the custom of the olden times, and no wonder then that the children that were born always would come out to be ideals and models.
Markandeya charitra, Prahlada charitra, Dhruva charitra, ilanti balulainatunti vaari yokka pavitramainatunti bhavamulanu bodhinchetunti vaaru aa naati kaalamulo.
In those days it used to be common practice to recount and relate this sacred history pertaining to Markandeya, Prahlada, Dhruva and the
like. Kaani anduvalane ఆనాటి బాలబాలికలు సద్భావములతో నీతి నిజాయితీలతో తన జీవితమును ప్రశాంతమైనటువంటి జీవితంగా రూపొందింప చేసుకుంటూ వచ్చారు.
దిస్ వాస్ రీజన్ వై ద చిల్డ్రన్ ఆఫ్ దోస్ డేస్ బాయ్స్ అండ్ గర్ల్స్ యూస్ టు గ్రో అప్ టు బి గుడ్ అండ్ నోబుల్.
ఈనాటి తల్లిదండ్రులు లేక తల్లులు గర్భస్థితిగా ఉండిన సమయం లోపల టెలివిజన్లు సినిమాలు ఇంకా 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 ఎన్నో విధమైనటువంటి విచిత్రమైనటువంటి ఘోరమైనటువంటి శీలరహితమైనటువంటి యొక్క దృశ్యాలు చూడటం చేతనే తమ బిడ్డలు కూడాను ఆ స్థితిని అందుకుంటూ ఉన్నారు.
బట్ టుడే ఇన్ టుడేస్ వరల్డ్ ఐదర్ ద పేరెంట్స్ ఆర్ ద మదర్ అలోన్ వాట్ డూ? దే సీక్ ఫర్ దర్ ఎంటర్టైన్మెంట్ ద మీడియం ఆఫ్ ద టీవీ ఆర్ ద సినిమా అండ్ అదర్ ఫార్మ్స్ ఆఫ్ క్రూడ్ అండ్ క్యారెక్టర్లెస్ ఎంటర్టైన్మెంట్ అండ్ సినేరియో సో దట్ ద చిల్డ్రన్ ఆల్సో ఆర్ బోర్న్ విత్ సచ్ టెండెన్సీస్.
కనుకనే అర్జునుడు సుభద్రకు పద్మవ్యూహాన్ని గురించి చెప్పే సమయంలో కృష్ణుడు ప్రవేశించి అడ్డు తగిలి, బావా వినేటువంటిది సుభద్ర అనుకుంటున్నావా? కాదు కాదు, గర్భస్థుడైనటువంటి శిశువే వింటున్నాడని ఈ సత్యాన్ని ప్రకటించాడు.
సో ఈవెన్ యాజ్ అర్జున వాజ్ ఎక్స్పౌండింగ్ టు సుభద్ర ద ఆర్ట్ ఆఫ్ దిస్ పద్మవ్యూహ, కృష్ణ ఇంటర్వీన్ అండ్ ఇంటర్జెక్టెడ్ విత్ ద వర్డ్స్, ఓ బ్రదర్ ఇన్ లా, ఐ యు థింకింగ్ దట్ సుభద్ర ఇట్ ఈస్ హూస్ లిసనింగ్ టు యువర్ వర్డ్స్? నో, ఇట్ ఈస్ అభిమన్యు ఇన్ ద వూమ్ హూస్ డూయింగ్ హిస్ ఇయర్.
చరిత్రను విజ్ఞానవేత్తలు అనేక విధములుగా హాస్యాస్పదంగా భావించి కృష్ణుడు ఏమిటి ఈ విధమైనటువంటి యొక్క అసభ్యమైనటువంటి అర్థరహితమైనటువంటి నమ్మ తగనటువంటి యొక్క విషయాలు చెప్పడం ఏమిటి అని కూడా విమర్శించినటువంటి వారు లేకపోలేదు.
అండ్ డౌన్ ద ఏజెస్ అండ్ ఫర్ అ లాంగ్ టైమ్ దే హావ్ బీన్ ఇన్ నంబర్ ఆఫ్ క్రిటిక్స్ హూ ఆర్ పాయింటింగ్ అవుట్ ఎ ఫింగర్ ఎట్ కృష్ణ. హౌ కుడ్ హీ కమ్ అండ్ టాక్ సచ్ బ్లాస్ఫెమీ, థింగ్స్ విచ్ డోంట్ మేక్ ఎనీ సెన్స్, which are beyond belief.
Aithe aanadu haasyamu parihasyamu gaavinchinatundi vijnanavettalu eenadu adi satyamu aneetundi yokka paristhiti kudunu vacharu.
But today what do you find? The scene has changed. People are now acknowledging that what was uttered in those days is verily true.
Americalo Institute of Child Health and హ్యూమన్ డెవలప్ అనేటువంటి ఒక పరిశోధన కేంద్రం ఒకటి ఉన్నది.
ఇన్ ద యునైటెడ్ స్టేట్స్ ఆఫ్ అమెరికా దర్ ఈస్ ఇన్స్టిట్యూషన్ గోయింగ్ బై ద నేమ్ ఇన్స్టిట్యూట్ ఆఫ్ చైల్డ్ హెల్త్ అండ్ హ్యూమన్ డెవలప్మెంట్,
కెరోలినా అనేటువంటి యూనివర్సిటీ.
ఇట్ ఈస్ అటాచ్డ్ టు కెరోలినా యూనివర్సిటీ.
ఇందులో ఈ విషయాన్ని చక్కగా పరిశోధించి కృష్ణుడు చెప్పినటువంటిది సత్యమా లేక అసత్యమా అనేటువంటి విషయాన్ని నిరూపించాలని ఒక గొప్ప ప్రొఫెసర్ దీన్ని అనేక సంవత్సరం నుంచి పరిశోధన చేస్తూ వచ్చాడు.
An eminent professor on the staff of this institution undertook this experiment. Whatever Krishna had said, is there any sense in it? Is it possible what was trying to communicate?
అతని అంటోని కాస్పర్ అనేటువంటి వాడు.
The name of this eminent scientist is Antoni Kasper.
ఈ అంటోని కాస్పర్ అనేక సంవత్సరం నుంచి దీని పరిశోధన సరిపి ఇది అసత్యము కాదు, మా యొక్క అల్పమైనటువంటి తెలివితేటలకు ఇది అందేటువంటిది కాదు. ఇది విశాలమైనటువంటి భావం కల విజ్ఞానులకే, వివేకులకే ఇది అర్థమవుతుంది. కనుక ఇది పరమ సత్యమని తన పరిశోధనల ద్వారా తాను నిరూపిస్తూ వచ్చాడు.
ఆఫ్టర్ ఇయర్స్ ఆఫ్ ఎక్స్పెరిమెంటింగ్ దాస్, దిస్ ఆంటోనీ కాస్పర్ కేమ్ టు ది కన్క్లూజన్ దట్ ఆర్ ఇన్సిగ్నిఫికెంట్ మైండ్స్ కెన్ నెవర్ పాసిబ్లీ కాంప్రహెండ్ ది సిగ్నిఫికెంట్ ట్రూత్ కంటెయిన్డ్ అండ్ ది ఫినామినన్ దట్ కృష్ణ వాస్ ట్రైయింగ్ టు అవుట్లైన్.
శిశువుకు దినము ఒక పండ రసము.
ఇట్ ఈస్ ఓన్లీ గివెన్ టు జాయింట్ ఇంటెలెక్ట్స్ టు అన్రావెల్ దిస్ మిస్టరీ. హి అక్నాలెడ్జ్డ్ దట్
నిమ్మ రసము.
Now again, pregnant women are normally given lemon juice or lime juice.
Injection ద్వారా ఇస్తూ వచ్చాడు.
In the form, what this gentleman did was, he was injecting this juice in the form of an injection.
ఆ బిడ్డ పుట్టిన తర్వాత తల్లి పాల కంటే నిమ్మ రసము,
and after the child
ఆపిల్ రసము చాలా ఇష్టపడి తల్లి విన్నటువంటి యొక్క శబ్దములను, తల్లి యొక్క గొంతు శబ్దమును ఆకర్షించేటువంటి యొక్క దివ్య శక్తి ఆ శిశువునకు కలదని కూడాను నిరూపిస్తూ వచ్చాడు.
ఇట్ ఇస్ ఆల్సో ప్రూవ్డ్ బియాండ్ డౌట్ దట్ దిస్ చైల్డ్ విచ్ ఇస్ జస్ట్ బోర్న్ హ్యాడ్ దిస్ వండర్ఫుల్ కెపాసిటీ టు రెస్పాండ్ టు వాట్ ఎవర్ ద మదర్ వాస్ సేయింగ్.
గర్భంలో ఉండినప్పుడు ఆ తల్లి ఏ ఏ భావములను, ఏ ఏ విషయములను శ్రవణం చేసిందో, గంటంతో చెప్పి ఉందో, అదే పదములు ఆ పుట్టిన తర్వాత ఆ బిడ్డ నోటి నుండి రాగలిగినాయి.
ద మిరాక్యులస్ థింగ్ కమ్స్ హియర్. Even as the child was in the womb, she used to hear all that the mother used to entertain in the form of thoughts. After the child was born, it used to utter the very same words echoing the thoughts of the child's mother.
Antoni Costa gadachina anaga 1984 samvatsaram lopala January 3rd tedilo yavat America kanta kudanu ee gadbatta shishuvu yokka paristhiti chakkaga bhagam bharatamlo cheppinatvanti ఈ సత్యాన్ని చక్కగా నిరూపిస్తుందాదని అన్ని పేపర్లో చాటినాడు.
దిస్ ఆంటోనీ కాస్పర్ వాల్ అడ్రెసింగ్ ఎ బిగ్ కాన్ఫరెన్స్ అండ్ ఆల్సో డిస్ట్రిబ్యూటింగ్ హిస్ ఫైండింగ్స్ టు న్యూస్ పేపర్ మెన్ ద వరల్డ్ ఓవర్ హీ మేడ్ దిస్ సిగ్నిఫికెంట్ అనౌన్స్మెంట్ ఆన్ January 3rd, 1984 వేరిన్ హీ సెడ్ వాట్ ఎవర్ కృష్ణ హ్యాడ్ సెడ్ వాట్ ఎవర్ హీ వాస్ ట్రైయింగ్ టు అన్రావెల్ ఈజ్ ఇండీడ్ ట్రూ.
కనుక అనేక మంది ఆధునిక తత్వవేత్తలు కూడాను, వైజ్ఞానికులు కూడాను కేవలం అల్పబుద్ధి కలిగినటువంటి వారు కాదు. కొంతమంది ఈ సత్యాన్ని పరిశీలించి పరమ సత్యాన్ని నిరూపించడాని కోసమని తన జీవితాన్ని కూడాను అంకితం చేసేవారు లేకపోలేదు.
సో అమౌంట్ ద ప్రజెంట్ డే సైంటిస్ట్ ఆల్సో వి హావ్ పీపుల్ హు ఆర్ అబౌవ్ దిస్ నారో వే ఆఫ్ లుకింగ్ ఎట్ థింగ్.
సో దేర్ వాస్ దట్ క్లిప్ వేర్ స్వామి ఇస్ మెన్షనింగ్ హౌ ఇన్ ద వూంబ్ Abhimanyu was getting affected by what was happening outside, you know. And Swami gives the example of Anthony Casper's research. Prem, you know, when I hear this, I feel actually a little bit sad for Swami. It's like people are not ready to listen to what Swami says. And so Swami makes use of, oh, okay, here's a scientist you revere and respect. You almost worship him like God, right? So he's saying it. Come on. I feel if we truly love Swami, if we have faith in Swami, Swami says that's enough. There is no question asked beyond that. But we seek, that's what we are doing even through, to an extent through our satsang possibly, that we are bringing in scientific studies. Because all said and done, we are constituted by the heart and the head. And the head somehow seems to get satisfied with scientific research. So, actually, when I heard this clip, I got a smile on my face thinking, Swami, Papam, how sad for you, right? You know, we are such dunderheads, we just don't listen to you. You have to use studies and, you know, Swami is giving precise dates, exact names, the name of the institution, the name of the journal study, everything perfectly. I was checking it up and that's right. Actually, that's what Anthony Casper has done, a lot of research on the impact on the unborn infant, all the different things that impact the unborn infant, and definitely television and media is one big thing. So it becomes very clear that the impact of television and audiovisual media on a child begins even before it is born, when it's in the womb of the mother itself.
Right. In fact, Swami even mentions that even though all of these things is actually told in our old scriptures, you know, only now when, because of these research, you go back to them and you say that, oh yeah, it actually must have happened and Krishna must have spoken like this and Arjuna must have done like this. And, you know, in between that clip, of course, Swami mentions that, imagine that was the case in the past when, you know, one piece of information was given to Abhimanyu and he held on to it. And Swami says, imagine the amount of junk that you see now, you know, when, especially women who are pregnant, what are the kind of things they take in when they carry this life in their own self?
Today, there's a lot of research that shows that a child is affected by the things that a woman takes in, literally, like the food she eats, the drinks that she takes in, and even the air that she takes in. You know, that's why they say that even if you're a smoker, when you're pregnant, you don't smoke, because right, the smoke can actually cause cancer in your child, which is not yet born. So, the gross level, definitely there are a lot of studies, but a lot of interest has now been generated in seeing the impact of subtle things also. As Swami would say, food is not just what you take in through your mouth. What you take in through your eyes, what you take in through your ears is also food. So, whatever is taken in through the senses, do they have an impact on the child? And one of those researches that I came across was done by a person by name Shinohara. Mm-hmm. And Shinohara did his research on women in their third trimester, means who have completed 6 months of pregnancy. What he did was he put up a television screen with headphones. So mm-hmm. the audio would be heard through the phones. This is to ensure that the audio doesn't go directly to the fetus.
Mm-hmm.
In the sense, it's not a soundproof chamber, right, the uterus. So whatever is happening outside, loud sounds can even reach the fetus. So in order to prevent that, the mothers were given headphones and videos were played. And he found, I think we mentioned this in brief last week, he found that positive messages, positive things, actually increase the activity of the fetus, while negative things decrease the activity of the fetus. And in that study, he has linked this because he says that those audiovisual inputs create reactions and result in different chemical reactions within the mother. And those chemical reactions exude different chemicals, and different chemicals have different roles. So he said that when you are watching something violent, when you are watching something aggressive, that is something very, when you are watching something that is overstimulating, a lot of adrenaline gets released, and adrenaline is a flight or fight hormone. It gets you prepared for running away or for fighting, because of which a lot of blood is pumped to the extremities of your body, which means there is no sufficient blood available to be pumped through the uterus, which is in the center of the body, because of which there is not enough nutrition received by the baby, because of which it doesn't move much. So see, it is so intricately connected. The chemicals that are generated in the mother's body also influence the fetus, not just the chemicals that the mother inputs. So on one hand, while we tell pregnant women that it's better that you give up smoking, you give up drugs, give up drinks and take a nutritious diet, it's so important that this nutritious diet be expanded to include things that we take in through our senses also.
No, when talking about the same point, in general, in the human mind, when you talk about empathy, now I think more and more researchers are talking about connecting this idea of empathy when you feel the other person's pain and joy to what is called the mirror neuron system in the brain, right?
Hmm.
They say in any part of the brain, there are 20% of the neuro, the brain cells, which actually mirror whatever is received from outside through the senses. Like suppose I'm sitting here and let's say I'm seeing you eat something.
Hmm.
There is at least 20% of my brain which is thinking that I'm eating something. Right?
Hmm.
So it's the rest of the brain cells which say that no, it's actually you are not eating because there's nothing going into your stomach. The sensors in that part of the body is not giving information that food is entering it.
That's why when we see something horrific, we throw up.
Right, we throw up in many ways. You know, when you're seeing a movie, you know very well that it's a movie. You know very well it is, you know, something which has been conjured up. But still you go with that emotions. You know, you
respond.
You actually, if you're conscious, you'll be smiling sometimes. You know, you cry sometimes. And you really sit up and, you know, you feel that stress. So even if you know very well that what you're seeing is unreal, even when you know that it's only a, you know, something which has been, it's a drama which has been created, 20% of your brain will always empathize with what you're seeing. So when you talk about that flight and fight response, the adrenaline creating that kind of a situation in pregnant women, how much ever you tell yourself mentally that this is unreal and this is just a movie, this is just a drama, your brain at least to 20% will react imagining that this is real. And that will cause these, you know, the reactions. And imagine this is in a person who is already grown up, you know, a person who is pregnant, the mother who is pregnant is going on. Imagine the effect on children who are going to see this, because they say that in children, the level of empathy is much, much more pronounced than this, because
it helps them to learn.
It helps them to learn. The whole idea is that, you know, in that initial,
you imitate and learn,
and where the way you empathize is so much more pronounced that when you're going through and you're seeing all this, and imagine the amount of, you know, harm which will be created by something like a video game which you're playing, you know, a racing game which you're playing, or a game where you go around shooting people. You almost grow up thinking that it is okay to harm somebody because that person will live again after he dies. Right? You know, that is how much it will affect the thinking of a child who is growing up and learning all these things.
You know, we are coming towards the last half an hour of our satsang, and we have got 2-3 more points to cover up. I just remember listening to a discourse clip where Swami says that all this so-called entertainment is like honey at the tip of a sword.
Right.
It feels sweet, no doubt, but before you realize it, it has already chopped your tongue. You know, and this is so true. In fact, I remember it was you only the other day who was mentioning how when they have done a study of different civilizations and how civilizations come to an end, one of the defining features is when people in the entertainment business earn much more than people in the other businesses which are producing, actually manufacturing or growing crops. And today we see the world, that's what it has come to, right?
Exactly. In fact, they were making a specific mention to sportsmen, because in the earlier civilizations, that was the largest entertainment industry. You didn't have a television or a computer or thing like that. Mm. So it's a display where somebody is seen as doing something, right?
Mm. Mm.
You know, when such people get prominence in society, when such people start making maximum money, because and, you know, that study they were talking about, the Roman civilization, where it went to such an extent that people who were winners in that, I think, chariot race or something like that, which used to
also
be the...
Also in the early Olympics, possibly.
Right, even in the early Olympics, they started making so much money that some of them were richer than even the kings, right? And even in some of the Eastern civilization, they had musicians who were richer than some kings.
Hmm.
You know, that was also an extreme. When any such thing happens, you know, somebody in the show business becomes more and more rich. And we see that today. You know,
Materially,
you have footballers who are so rich. We have actors and actresses who are so rich. And that is a sign that more and more people are glued to the unreal aspects of society.
An unproductive, unreal.
Right, because in the Roman civilization and the Greek civilization, such sports were promoted when the government was beginning to fail. Right, when the, you know, the mechanism where the ruler was not able to provide enough wherewithal for the people and the citizen, they used to create such games like this, you know, the games of gladiators and the games of races and chariot racing and horse racing. All of this was created so that it would kind of divert the attention of people from what they were lacking in life. So anything which actually takes you from reality, and when that starts getting prominence economically in your society, then it's a sign that something is wrong in the civilization and
there
the culture.
There is a decay that has set in.
Right.
That leads us to one possibly final important question, which is, what do we do now? I mean, is it complete avoidance of television, complete avoidance of all audiovisual media, which is very, very difficult because it has now become an integral part of our life. So, what do we avoid? How much do we avoid? Should we avoid? These are questions that we need to answer before we can conclude this satsang. At least to the level of our understanding, we need to answer it. But I think even before we begin answering this, it would be best to listen to the final discourse clip that we have today, where Swami gives us some hints on these very questions.
Right. We'll listen to that clip. It's about 1.5 minutes and we'll carry our discussion forward from there.
ఇగో విద్యకు సంబంధించిన చూడండి,
ఎడ్యుకేషనల్ పర్పస్ యూ కెన్ సీ,
నీతికి సంబంధించినటువంటి విషయాల మీరు చూడండి,
మోరల్ వాల్యూస్ యూ కెన్ వాచ్.
కానీ ఈనాటి టీవీల వల్ల వచ్చేటువంటి రోగాలు నివారణకారి రోగాలుగా ఉంటున్నాయి.
ఇన్ఫాక్ట్ మెనీ సఫర్ ఫ్రమ్ ఇన్క్యూరబుల్ డిసీజెస్ బికాస్ ఆఫ్ టీవీ.
టీవీ కాదది, టీబీగా రూపొందుతా ఉంది.
ఇట్స్ నాట్ టీవీ, ఇట్ బికమ్స్ ఈవెన్ టీబీ.
టీబీ అనగా ఏమిటి?
టీబీ
అనగా క్షయరోగము.
టీబీ ట్యూబర్క్లోసిస్.
మన ఎందు ఏమాత్రం కూడా నువ్వు పవిత్రమైన భావాలు లేకపోయినప్పుడు ఇట్లాంటి రోగాలు చేరకుండా ఇంకేమవుతుంది?
చల్లని
గాలి పీల్చు. నీకు ఎక్కడైనా పని లేకపోతే ఒక రోడ్డు లోపల బయటికి పోయి చక్కగా కొంచెం వాక్ చేయి.
ఇఫ్ యూ ఫైండ్ సమ్ లీజర్ జస్ట్ వాక్ అలాంగ్ ది స్ట్రీట్.
కేవలం టీవీ వేసుకుని అక్కడ కూర్చోవద్దు.
డోంట్ వాచ్ ది టీవీ సింప్లీ.
ఇక్కడ టీవీ వేసుకుని కూర్చుంటే పక్కన వంటింట్లోని పొగంతా వస్తుంటుంది.
అండ్ వెన్ యూ స్టార్ట్ వాచింగ్ టీవీ యూ ఫైండ్ ఆల్ ద స్మోక్ కమింగ్ అవుట్ ఆఫ్ ది కిచెన్.
అక్కడ చేసేటువంటి శబ్దం అంతా కూడా ఇక్కడ వినపడుతుంటుంది.
అండ్ యూ ఆల్సో లిసన్ టు ద సౌండ్.
టీవీ లోపల ఒక విధమైనటువంటి ఒక అభ్యంతరం కలిగింది అని తల్లిని పోయి కోప్పడతాం.
అండ్ బికాస్ ఇట్స్ ఎ కైండ్ ఆఫ్ అబ్స్ట్రక్షన్ టు
వాచ్ ది టీవీ.
షౌట్ అట్ యువర్ మదర్.
మంచిగా తల్లిని సంతోషపెట్టి,
మేక్ యువర్ మదర్ హ్యాపీ.
ఆమె చేసినటువంటి పనిలో నీవు కూడా తోడైపోయి,
యు ఆల్సో కోఆపరేట్,
హెల్ప్ చేయి,
హెల్ప్ యువర్ మదర్.
అది మన యొక్క భారత సంస్కృతి యొక్క ప్రధానమైనటువంటి యొక్క సూత్రం.
దట్ ఇస్ ది మెయిన్ ప్రిన్సిపల్ ఆఫ్
హెల్ప్ ఎవర్ హర్ట్ నెవర్,
హెల్ప్ ఎవర్ హర్ట్ నెవర్.
వాట్ సమ్ హీ సెడ్ అబౌట్ దట్ రిమైండ్స్ us of so many times when we'll be watching TV and probably your mother will turn on the mixer or something and it will disturb you. Right.
And you shout at your mother.
Exactly.
And you know, I think the takeaway from this would be the last statement. Help ever, hurt never. And this hurt is not only for others, but for our own selves. When Swami says help ever, hurt never, it is not only restricted to others. Even when it comes to our own self, Swami says help your own self, never hurt your own self. And unconsciously or consciously, we are hurting ourselves day in and day out. In the beginning of the clip, Swami, you know, mentioned, of course, if it's something related to education, if something that inspires you, definitely watch. Yes, we watch. If for most of us, Swami is the predominant theme in our audio-visual interactions. So great it is. We use social media for sharing things about Swami. Fantastic. It's wonderful. But at the same time, you know, I don't think we can justify being on Facebook for 12 hours a day, 14 hours a day, saying that most certain times it is Swami's post that I'm liking or it is Swami's post that I'm sharing. Because any kind of addiction is bad. You know, any kind of addiction is bad. If I'm really, one may say that no, divine addiction is good. If I'm addicted to Swami, I don't think I will be spending 14 hours on Facebook and sharing Swami stuff. If I'm addicted to Swami, I'll not have time to eat. I'll not have time to sleep. I'll not have time to do anything else because He dominates all my thoughts. He dominates my being. He's always there with me. So, though we are camouflaging it as addiction to Swami, we are actually addicted to social media. We are actually interested in how much are people appreciating or liking what we have shared. There was a time when it was, I am, and therefore I share. Today it has become, I share, and therefore I am. Our reason for existence is based on how we are perceived on social media. That's how it has become, sadly. So, I think we need to separate out these kind of false, convenient philosophies that we make up, thinking that, you know, I see only Swami's thing on television, so I'm sitting on my iPad for 10 hours a day, yeah, but I see only YouTube Swami's channels. See, we have to see whether that is our addiction to Swami or whether that's our addiction to video, and in that addiction I'm trying to take the least harmful path. So, based on all this, Prem, I just felt that, you know, when we talk about how much of or what of TV should we see or not, two aspects come up. One is the qualitative aspect and one is the quantitative aspect.
Very true. I mean, I would like to put it this way, that let's say there's a person who has this habit of seeing TV and eating food, right, and really wants to give up that because Swami is saying this. For that person, the first step probably is, you know, you have an issue, which, you know, you have a habit, and what Swami will always say is, sublimate the habit. Okay, I see something, I mean, I've got addicted to this thing of, I want to watch something while I'm eating food. Can you replace what you watch with something which is, you know, which is noble? probably play something which is more pleasant, pleasant music. As somebody was asking, one of the listeners had written to us, what if I would like to listen to Swami's discourse while I'm eating food? And we have an afternoon satsang. I think many of our listeners will be listening to, Radio Sai while having their food. So definitely it's one step ahead there is to sublimate this problem which you have of wanting some kind of entertainment when you're eating food, or when you're alone, you want some kind of entertainment. So start by sublimating it. It's nothing wrong if you're eating food and you want to listen to Radio Sai, or you have no time where you can listen to Radio Sai, because there was one listener once, she had written to us that, she works in an office and there you can't listen to Radio Sai. And the only time she can probably listen is when she comes home for lunch for a few hours. And she uses maximum of that. The moment she enters the home, she goes and switches on the Radio Sai, and then the rest of it happens, with Radio Sai playing in the background. In such a situation, the person is trying to make best use of the time. So there is nothing like a blanket thing of, no, you can't do this while you're eating food. So the first step is sublimate the habit which you already have. And the next step is, let this not be the only way you can connect to Swami. Yes, it's good to listen to Radio Sai, but your connection to Swami should not be dependent on Radio Sai or anything else. And so invariably, that is the next step. If you feel that, don't be satisfied with, this act of sublimating what you're already doing, but move to the next step of detaching yourself from anything which becomes like a appendage for you to connect to Swami.
See, in today's world, when there is a proliferation of these so-called mediums of Swami who are bringing disrepute to Swami's name, we also have to be careful that we don't fool ourselves in becoming addicted to a medium because it is camouflaged. It is no use saying that I don't believe all these mediums, they are just trying to mint money in Swami's name, they are fooling people. I just have my own connection. I listen to Radio Sai. There, you have again fallen in the trap. If you think that Radio Sai is a medium, then also it is wrong, because Swami says when it's a one-to-one connection, it is a connection that is within. And that should be our ultimate goal. That is what it is. We have to be independent. Independent in the sense we are dependent on what is within us. And there's that beautiful quote which says, being is lost in becoming. We are never able to just be. We are always either thinking of the past, thinking of the future, or doing something. And we will never be able to be peaceful. We will never find true joy in life unless we can just be. And in our goal towards just being, I am happy. Why are you happy? No reason. In fact, I remember one of our research scholars, Sanjay Malingam, he was saying that When he was having a discussion in the interview room with Swami on bliss and happiness, Swami gave him a beautiful brief description of what is bliss. Swami said, causeless happiness is bliss. If you are happy, ask yourself why you are happy. If you find a reason for that, that's not bliss. Because bliss is causeless. It comes from simply existence, I'm happy. Why? I don't know. I'm just happy. That's it. That is bliss. And so, when we are in a journey to move towards bliss, that is causeless happiness, that is where we find joy in simply being, not because I'm doing, not because I'm talking, not because I'm listening, not because I'm eating, not because of anything, then in that sense when we view, yes, it is, that is also a kind of addiction. If I say that I want to listen to Radio Sai when I have food, I want to watch Swami's videos when I have food, because as you rightly said, I am still dependent on something external for my connection with Swami, which should be internal. So in that sense, yes, it is not advisable. But as you said, qualitatively, when we look at it, it's better. If I am addicted, if every time I have to watch something on television when I eat food, it's better to watch something spiritual or watch something inspiring or watch Swami's videos. But it's like saying, is 5th standard better or 1st standard better? Yes, 5th grade is better, but 5th grade is not the ultimate. You have to graduate higher. In the same way, it is good. It is better than the other option, but we have to remember that our final goal is joy in just being, causeless happiness. With that goal in mind, I think if we view, things become clear.
Exactly. The other point which Swami was mentioning, instead of sitting and watching TV, why don't you go for a walk? No, when Swami was saying that, I was imagining, but you know, even when we are going out for a walk, and the first thing we want to do is we want to plug in our ears, right? We want to listen to something.
Music.
I wouldn't completely say it is wrong. It again comes back to that same point. You know, when you go out, let's say that I go for a walk in the park in the evening, and the idea which I'm having is I want to think about Swami. You know, I want to be out there and think of Swami as I'm going for a walk. There is absolutely nothing wrong if you listen to a discourse at that time. But at some point, we have to graduate to the level where I can just sit there, and if I wish to think of Swami, I can think of Swami. I don't need anything to connect. But there is, you can't say that it is wrong to listen to good music. And in fact, Swami himself would encourage that. In other discourses, Swami says, listen to good music, listen to talks, listen to, you know, be in satsang. The whole idea is, you, as social beings, we need some kind of support from outside to direct our mind towards something. There is nothing wrong in choosing things which will encourage you to have good thoughts. But be conscious of the idea that at some point, our good thoughts, as you're saying, should be costless. You know, it's because left alone, I will only think of Swami. You know, when I have nothing to do, I'll sit and think of Swami. Our conscious effort should be to progress towards that state.
That brings in the second aspect that we spoke about, which is quantity. So, as I said, one is the quality of viewing. Yes, it's definitely good to watch something spiritual, something inspiring, something that is informative, something that's educational. But then, just because it's informing, educational, inspiring or spiritual, I can't spend, as you rightly said, sitting and watching videos of poverty in the world and feeling for them rather than going out and doing Gram Seva. It's good to watch. Is it bad to watch the video? It's good. But if that is the only thing that I'm doing, it's not enough. Therefore, the quantity aspect comes in. For instance, in the hostels, I'm sure all of us have watched television. We have even watched some movies, certain movies that are shown to us. But there is a limit. I think on an average, about every student must be watching, I think about 45 minutes to 1 hour of television a day. A day must be about 7 hours a week, because I say when it's a movie runs for about 2 hours, and every day there's news for about half an hour, and sometimes there's a match that is shown. So on an average, we can take it like 1 hour per day. So I think it's important that we have some limits like that. Be it Swami, be it inspirational stuff, be it whatever, my exposure to something external. You know, when my happiness is depending on something external, should be for about, say, 2 hours a day or 3 hours a day. I feel even if you take it a little broader, let's say that in a day, I'm spending 16 hours in a wakeful state, in which 8 hours I'm working. In the remaining 8 hours, can my happiness be dependent on different external things? Say, a part of it on games, a part of it on going for a walk, a part of it on meeting with family, a part of it on television. Accordingly, if we budget, you know, television, I mean audiovisual media, whether it's our mobile phones or tablets. I think if we budget like that, because to start off with, we have only 8 hours. If we do even equitable allocation, I don't think we can afford to allot more than 2 hours a day for all these kind of audiovisual mediums. Because more than that, you are actually being negligent somewhere else. You are giving up some other responsibility. So, though you are watching Swami's videos, though you are watching inspirational videos, if you do it beyond limits, I think it would be harmful. It would be defeating the purpose. And therefore, to start off with, possibly, this is my humble opinion, I just feel maybe about 1.5 to 2 hours a day would be a good place to begin with, and then try to reduce and try to get more independent.
Right. And one more point which I'd like to mention is, you know, what Swami was telling, you can see content which is educational. You can see things which will benefit you. And I'm sure many, many people will, you know, have this this excuse of saying that, and all of us, you know, I choose what I want to see. It's true. We all choose what we want to see. But, and something which we mentioned last week is, we are also drawn to see things which we initially did not intend to see. And the only way we will stop ourselves from going into that is if we are sure of what we want out of life. You know, when we have a sure sense of purpose. For instance, you know, if we are very, very clearly a vegetarian, and I've chosen to be a vegetarian, I have no problem in going into a hotel which serves non-vegetarian food because I know what I want to pick from there. I go into a supermarket where they sell all kinds of things. I know exactly what I want to pick there. I will not be disturbed by probably
the meat, or whatever
meat being sold there, or cigarette being sold there, or you know, some kind of
alcohol being sold there.
Anything else sold there. Because I know the purpose of why I'm going into that marketplace, and I know what I want and I can pick out. Because my head is clear, because I'm clear of what I want out of this experience, I can clearly take what I want. And that is another thing, you know, how can I mean, let's say that somebody is really working in an industry where they can't take the eyes off the TV. Let's say that somebody is working in an industry where they're a social media manager or something like that. I work with this all this time. So I think we don't have a choice of sometimes choosing that I will give only 1 hour, I'll give only half an hour, and this is my work. And we've had these beautiful Chinnakathas that Swami says about even a butcher being able to be spiritual. Right, so we can be drawn into professions where we don't have the choice to say that I will do this much, I will not do this much. So in such cases, what is more important, especially when we are bringing up children, even for our own self, is how much clear we can be about the purpose of our life. You know, what are we going to do with life? I have time from I'm a 5-year-old to I'm a 50-year-old. What do I want to achieve out of this time? If that is clear,
the rest will follow.
Right. Even if I'm sitting in front of a TV, I know what I want to take out of that. And the more and more this is clear, the more and more you will be able to pick what you need. You can see 100 advertisements throughout the day, but you will know, if you know that Swami says, do you really need it, you will buy it. If that idea is clear, you're not going to be disturbed by what you're going to see. And so
you're not going to get pulled into buying that.
Right. So even when you, when this question of is it okay, can I listen to Swami's discourse when I'm going for a walk? Is it okay, can I listen to Radio Sai when I'm eating food? If this purpose is being strengthened by all of these things which you do to sublimate your time, I think that is moving in the right direction.
I think that is the best possible summary that we can get. I have nothing further to add, and the clock in our studios already shows 1:53. I hope, dear listeners, that you had an enlightening time just as both of us had, going through Swami's discourses and sharing our thoughts, going into some of the modern researches of science. And honestly speaking, for me, it has definitely been a kind of a wake-up call, because this satsang over this week and last week has definitely given me pointers towards deficiencies that exist in me, and has given me hopefully the inspiration to correct them completely. If not completely, at least partially. We hope that it has been the same case with all of you. And as always, if you have anything to share, any feedback to give, you can write to us at listener@radiosai.org.
So with that, dear listeners, we offer this humble effort of ours at Swami's Lotus Feet. And once again, as we started the program, we thank Swami for, you know, so beautifully laying out, not just giving us the overall message. You know, Swami could have finished his entire message by saying that, you know, Tattvamasi or Aham Brahmasmi, because that is the reality. But Swami took the trouble to break it down to everyday life, you know, to what you eat, what you see, what you speak, what you do. And he has given it out in his discourses. And how much more grateful can we be, you know, for this treasure that Swami has left us. So praying to Swami and thanking Swami for that, and thanking all of you for joining us this week and the last week. On behalf of Arvind and myself, we offer this at Swami's Lotus Feet. In a short while from now, you'll be joined by Brother Chandu for the next program, Love to Love. Do join us again next week for the next episode of Afternoon Satsang.
वृंदावन में राधे श्याम
वृंदावन में राधे श्याम
वृंदावन में राधे श्याम
वृंदावन में राधे श्याम
अवधपुरी में जय सियाराम अवधपुरी में जय सिया राम,
अवधपुरी में जय सिया
राम, विंध्य हिमाचल में शिव शंकर,
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 परतीपुरी में साई राम,
परतीपुरी में साई राम,
परतीपुरी में साई राम, कृष्ण शिव गोविंद नरहरि,
राम कृष्ण शिव गोविंद नरहरि,
राम कृष्ण शिव गोविंद नरहरि,
राम कृष्ण शिव गोविंद नरहरि,
नारायणा साईं नारायणा, नारायणा साईं नारायणा,
नारायणा साईं नारायणा,
वृंदावन में राधे श्याम,
वृंदावन में राधे श्याम,
अवधपुरी में जय सिया राम, विंध्य हिमाचल में शिव शंकर,
विंध्य हिमाचल में शिव शंकर,
परतीपुरी में साई राम,
परतीपुरी में साई राम,
राम कृष्ण शिव गोविंद नरहरि,
राम कृष्ण शिव गोविंद नरहरि,
नारायणा साईं नारायणा,
नारायणा साईं नारायणा,
नारायणा साईं नारायणा, वृंदावन में राधे श्याम, अवधपुरी में जय सिया राम।
ನಂದ
స్వరూప సాయి గోపాల
నిత్యానంద స్వరూప సాయి గోపాల
నిత్యానంద స్వరూప సాయి గోపాల
నిత్యానంద స్వరూప సాయి గోపాల
నీలమేఘ శ్యామలా రూప గోపాల
నీలమేఘ శ్యామలా రూప గోపాల
నిత్యానంద స్వరూప సాయి గోపాల
నిత్యానంద స్వరూప సాయి గోపాల
ఈశ్వరాంబనందన సాయి గోపాల
ఈశ్వరాంబనందన సాయి గోపాల
నిత్యానంద స్వరూప సాయి గోపాల
నిత్యానంద స్వరూప సాయి గోపాల
నిత్యానంద స్వరూప సాయి గోపాల
నిత్యానంద స్వరూప సాయి గోపాల
నీల మేఘ శ్యామల రూప గోపాల నిత్యానంద స్వరూప సాయి గోపాలా.